Hello, you're very welcome to this week's Inside Education with me, Sean Delaney. You can listen to or download podcasts of all previous Inside Education programmes from the webpage seandelaney.com/podcasts. You can follow the programme on Twitter with the handle at Inside Ed. On this week's programme, we explore transition year. What is its history? How does it vary from school to school? And how is it different from other years in post-primary schools? We answer those questions and many more by speaking to a long-time coordinator and supporter of Transition Year, Gerry Jeffers. Dr. Gerry Jeffers is author of the book Transition Year in Action, which is published by the Liffey Press. He works as an educational researcher and worked as a lecturer in Maynooth University and before that as a teacher, guidance counsellor and deputy principal in schools in Dublin, Kilkenny and Kenya. I'm going to bring you the interview in two parts, this week and next week. When I met up with Gerry Jeffers, I first asked him, what makes a good transition year?
I think if we go back to the original vision, I think the recipe is there. It's also there in the guidelines that what we're saying is that educators are asked to devise programmes for 15, 16-year-olds that promotes maturity. And it's as broad and as general as that. And I think it is, depending on how well schools grasp that, and it's an opportunity but it's a challenge, then you get a good transition year. When I was doing this research in this book, Transition Year in Action, there's a great conversation between myself and two coordinators, Aisling Savage and Glenda Groom, but they're so wise and they're so insightful. So they would say, keep it fresh, have a lot of variety. But most of all, you need the vision, the big picture that's there in the school and that often it's driven by a good coordinator. Even though the guidelines would say you need a team, the evidence is very strong. A committed, insightful coordinator supported by the principal and the deputy principal. That's kind of a quick recipe.
And can you give an example of how a vision of a school for a transition year might translate into the delivery of a transition year?
Yeah, if you decide we're going to create really relevant experiences that contribute to youngsters' maturity, you can't just say we have this model of junior cycle or of junior cert or leaving cert. You have to really think it out. Why are we bringing them outside to something like work experience, or why are we doing the mini company? I mean, they would be often identified as key ingredients. You know, why are we doing this, and how is this contributing to maturity? I would say they're hugely related to the vision.
Would every school have the same vision then?
No.
So could you give an example of different visions that might be present?
Transition year is a bit like the meat and the sandwich. The two big lumps of bread are the junior cert and the leaving cert exams. And understandably, a lot of schools have kind of one eye on the leaving cert and they think in terms of points. They think in terms of really, this is a kind of waiting ground in fourth year for what's going to happen in fifth and sixth year. So they're saying, well, the real value of transition year is how it contributes to points rather than how it contributes to maturity. So you have one school that is very much kind of running effectively a three-year leaving cert. And then you'll have another school that is running what you might call a more genuine transition year. It's a broad spectrum. Like there's whatever there are, 620 or so transition year programs, and they're all different. The beauty is that the guidelines say to schools, this is not a top-down project like the Leaving Cert or the Junior Cert. This is not Marlborough Street saying, here is what you have to do. It's saying to schools, you know your students, you can invent a program. Once within the broad guidelines of promoting to maturity, go for it. It's a bit frightening, but it's also very empowering.
Okay, so are you saying that maybe one school might decide that they're going to develop entrepreneurial skills in students, another might decide that they're going to prioritise sports, another might decide to prioritise, say, music?
Yeah, those three examples are very good because I can think of schools where I would say, yes, they're characterised by sport, they're characterised by the emphasis on entrepreneurs and so on. I suppose the best ones have a mixture of all of those things and are really recognising we need to have something that is responsive to the variety of youngsters we have. If you talk about maturity, so what do we mean? I mean, at that age, you're only emerging really from childhood. You're on the cusp of the adult world, you're engaging with the adult world. So for some youngsters, it is what work experience offers and what that opens up and a different way of experiencing things. But for others, it can be in the classroom. I mean, there may be a module on something like media studies and youngsters are saying, my goodness, I can study film in the classroom. I mean, how exciting is this? For others, as you say, the mini company has been particularly successful. There's youngsters and it's the musical or the drama getting on the stage. All of that opens up new worlds. But then we don't want to neglect the mainstream. When I make the reference to a school that may be emphasising points, that isn't to say you can't do exciting things in English, Irish, maths, physics, chemistry, history, geography and so on. So again, you come back to the original guidelines. And one of the things that's, I think, really critical is the guidelines have an emphasis on active teaching and learning. So they talk about negotiated learning. They talk about personal responsibility, they talk about group work, they talk about team teaching and so on. So if we take just negotiated learning, that confidence on the part of a teacher to go into a group of students, not quite say, what would you like yourself? But that sense in which, what are they interested in? Let's say you decide you're going to do a lot of project work. So you have a menu, you give youngsters a choice. You say, I want you to do a project that maybe it's spread out over a few weeks. Now, that can open up all sorts of avenues for youngsters in terms of research, in terms of, if you like, getting their teeth into something that is a bit different from doing the homework for tomorrow, which tends to be the whole experience in primary school and in junior cycle.
So what kind of projects have you seen schools do that are interesting?
I suppose the Young Social Innovators project, I would say, is maybe the most spectacular.
What is that?
So it's not unlike the Young Scientist model. Essentially, the idea is that you identify a social issue and you sit down in a small group and you say, what are we going to do about it? So it's kind of action orientated. And some of them are spectacular. They have a showcase every year that is, again, not unlike what say the Young Scientist exhibition, which would be much better known. And linked to that, then they have what they call speak out. So as the youngsters engage in the issue, so they might be addressing homelessness, or they might be addressing poverty, or they might be addressing international development, the sustainable development goals, and looking at how does that work out in practice in their own lives. And then they have these speak out events where youngsters find their voice, which is, you know, hugely relevant thing when you're 15, 16 in terms of building confidence and so on.
And what does that involve, the speak out part?
Well, that's, if you like, it's a public speaking type event, but it's very much focused on social issues. I'm not a big fan of competitions, but I like the fact that sometimes that structure can give a focus, can give a deadline, can give an opportunity for people to exhibit what they've learned. And some of them are local. I mean, mini company trade fairs are tremendous, exciting events and so on, where youngsters demonstrate what they have done in terms of, and they get interviewed on that. And I think it's that confidence building that comes from engaging youngsters, getting them to speak out and so on. So that a lot of what Transition Year does that seems to be successful is allows for active participation that leads to building a confidence. And that list is much longer than what I've just said. I mean, you have things like study visits, you have things like visiting speakers, you have things like discussion, debate, as I mentioned, I think team teaching. And just the whole work simulation, activity-based learning in general.
And how is the timetable then for transition year different to the timetable, say, for third year or for fifth year?
Okay, two things to say on that, Sean. One would be in the early days when I was working on the support service for transition year, I think one of the kind of ideas we cracked that was quite helpful, and that is you've got to think in terms of the timetable, which is what you do Monday to Friday. But you've also got to think in terms of the calendar. So the calendar, so that's the whole, what's going on in the year. So let's say in November or in March, you may have a whole week where they're out on work experience or on community service. You may have many more dedicated days where we're now saying, take mental health is a big concern at the moment, so a number of schools will run maybe a mental health day or a mental health week. And that is where you suspend the normal timetable. So that's the calendar idea. Then within the timetable, we often think of four layers. So the once-off events, in other words, on the whatever date it is, this happened. We had this visiting speaker, this poet came in and they did a workshop, and it was the whole morning. And that only happened once, right? Then you might have what you might call transition year specific subjects. And often they might only be two or three periods a week. But it might be something, again, that's playing to the strengths of somebody on the staff. So you might have somebody and they've got a particular expertise in horticulture and gardening, and that they run a garden. And that you might say, well, we can't do that in 40 minutes. We need to put 80 minutes. Or we might even do 120. In fact, good timetables, in my opinion, have big blocks in them in transition year. Double, triple, quadruple classes that work well. Then you would have modules that are basically about sampling subjects so that you will make more informed decisions for the subjects you pick up in fifth year. And often good timetables are run on a modular basis that are, let's say you might typically have 10 weeks of one, 10 weeks of something else, and 10 weeks of something else. That's easy to do, or relatively easy to do, if you have, let's say, three class groups of transition year. So what you would do is you might be timetabled for a particular class, let's say it's physics, and in 10 weeks you'd have one group of students, and then when that 10 weeks is over you start again with a different group, and so on. Meanwhile, the group who've done the physics are off sampling economics or history or something like that. The fourth layer would be the continuity subjects. The core subjects would continue. So in that sense, the timetable could look not that different from the fifth year timetable.
Is transition year generally mandatory in a school, or do some schools offer the choice?
First of all, the department has always emphasised it's an optional programme. About 80% of schools offer it. Within all of those schools, there'd be a small number that would make it compulsory. And that sometimes is to do with school size. In other words, if you've only got 30 youngsters doing the junior cert, it's very difficult to say we'll have the option of going into fifth year. So there can be practical reasons why you make it compulsory. In the majority of schools, it's optional. In some schools, you wouldn't think it was optional because it is so popular, everybody takes it, or virtually everybody. And then in other schools, it's a single class. And some of that has been tradition that has developed. Like transition year was mainstreamed in 94. It was first introduced in 74, but very small numbers up to 94. Then it was mainstreamed in 94. In other words, there was an injection of resources and that worked well, and there was a dramatic increase, and it's been upward since over the last 20 years.
And if you were advising a student on whether or not to take up transition year in their school, what kind of things do they think about in making that decision?
In practice, they think about, what are my friends doing? In other words, if the friends are doing it, I'll do it. That means you have to drill down a little bit and see who are the opinion shapers, who are the leaders. So in some schools it is perceived that it's a program, especially where it's optional. And if there's only one class, they might say, oh, this is for the overachievers. And in other places, it can be seen as for the underachievers. So that's that kind of peer pressure thing that works. I think it's very difficult to go against the group mentality. Of course, what I would talk about is maturity. What a fantastic opportunity when anyone is 15, 16 to have this kind of breathing space, this breath of fresh air, this non-exam focus opportunity to do all these exciting things that are all about learning, that are all about growing up, that are all about becoming more mature. It's a tremendous opportunity.
But would it make more sense then to have transition year after the Leaving Cert and before college or an apprenticeship or entering the workforce?
I think one of the problems arising from transition year is now we are in danger of putting all the exciting learning things into the fourth year basket and making first year, second year, third year, fifth year and sixth year even more boring than they were. Because, you know, you think, well, they're the years where you concentrate on examinations. Whereas I realize if we take what I was suggesting there about it's about growing up, it's about maturing, then you have to actually look and say there has to be a transitional element in first year, in second year. And of course there is. I mean, that's just the natural way. But I think we've even to be more explicit about that. I mean, why should it be that you only get a chance to take part in a musical, let's say, in fourth year? Clearly, for some youngsters, they're ready in second year and they should be exposed to that and so on. And hopefully, junior cycle reform will bring some of that around. But equally, the notion that fifth and sixth year should be totally hot housing is crazy. So to come to your question, do youngsters go into college, university, too young, too immature? I suppose the evidence is quite strong that if people do take time out, do a kind of their own transition year, a gap year, as they have in some countries. I've seen it in first year university, the difference between people who are not coming straight from school. They have an extra bit of wisdom, they have confidence, they have a different perspective. They're also much more focused in terms of, I'm here, I'm this is not just a continuation of school. But also we have to be realistic about the cost of the individual. In other words, it'd be lovely to take a year off and go to France or go around the world.
And is it open for schools to time the transition year for after the Leaving Cert? Or
no.
No.
A few years ago, the man who introduced transition year, the minister at the time, Dick Burke, who died earlier this year, I interviewed him in 2001 and he was very, very clear. I think he dismissed it and he said that was a kind of Jesuit-inspired idea that you'd have this seventh year of philosophy. And he said, I wanted a much more egalitarian model. I wanted it at 15, 16-year-olds and I wanted everybody to benefit from it. He had very clear ideas on what his vision was, yeah.
And where do you think that came from in here?
Well, him, it came from his own experience. He'd been a student, he'd been a teacher. And he saw the treadmill effect of, you know, what you called hot housing. He saw that very much and he thought, wouldn't it be great if people had time to stand and stare, to engage in the community? Maybe I didn't emphasize that enough. I think the whole business of what transition year offers is that opportunity for schools to connect in a very different way with the community, with outside agencies, bringing people in so that school is not an isolated bubble from its community, from its hinterland, be that geographical or its particular constituency. And for youngsters going out on something like community service or work experience, or even one day visits, I mean, taking youngsters on a train or a bus and taking them to Belfast or taking them to Killarney or taking them to Galway, or in many cases taking them to Dublin, and structuring your activities in terms of what are we doing. When I was teaching in Fort House Community College, I used to teach a module, Social and Political Studies, and one of the activities we engaged in was one day in the year. It was like a form of social orienteering. So I would pair the students up and I would give them a number of tasks. So they had to go around the city and find this museum or find this building society. And would you believe, back in the 80s, find out how much it might cost to get a mortgage, or how do you go about getting a mortgage. Or so many things are now available on the internet, but it was really good that you could say and call into the passport office and find out what's needed. But it was giving them the experience of having to present themselves, but also showing what were the possibilities in terms of a city. So I meet past students and they still remind me of one of them I met recently. He said, I never passed a forecourt without thinking of you. And you always saying this is a public building, you should go in every so often and see what's happening. And it's a great place to see the mixture of criminals and barristers and judges and police, and all human life is there.
Your new book, Gerry, is called Transition Year in Action. How did the book come about?
So it's built into my own history a bit. So I'd been teaching. We introduced transition year in Firhouse in 86. In 94, I became part of the support service for transition year. In 2000, I went to lecture in the education department in Maynooth. And of course, at the time, I thought, well, this would be great. I'd be a chance for lots of reading and writing. But it was only when I retired in 2012 that I actually found there was unfinished business. I felt there was a need, Sean, for a book that would be kind of halfway between an academic book and a more popular account. So each chapter is a standalone chapter that tries through the lens of individual practitioners to tell the story. So let's say the chapter on work experience, we begin with John O'Connor, the principal in Colossian-Ishgeliga in Carisavine, and he contends that that's the most geographically isolated school. I think that's the phrase he used. But in other words, there's a huge challenge in terms of providing work experience in Carisavine, and he's very inventive and imaginative about how he does it, how they do it in that school. And so out of that, I then talk about what's going on in work experience in other schools, and you're trying to construct an idea as to what good work experience modules would look like. So the same approach. There's a terrific development education program in Carnew, Collège de Breed, led by a woman called Eleanor Lee. Absolutely magnificent programs. I'm not saying these are necessarily the best practitioners, but in some cases they are. I have three terrific people talking different angles on Mini Company. And there's 30-odd chapters giving a different angle about. The history chapter begins a school tour in Munich. So it's trying to take it from there, capturing student voices, capturing parent voices, but most of all trying to capture teacher practitioner voices.
So you actually went around and spoke to different teachers and practitioners?
Yeah, because obviously over the years I had, particularly from the time on the support service, I was aware of schools that I thought were doing a good job. So they were the places I went to.
Yes, I'm just looking at some of the titles, you know, fundraising for charity, personal identity and creativity, lights, camera, action, media and film studies,
yeah.
Nurturing young volunteers. There's such a variety of content in there.
Yeah, that one you mentioned, fundraising. In the original plan, that wasn't on my list. And I contacted a former colleague from the support service, and I said, you can have any chapter you like. You know, I knew that their TY program was so good. And she said, fundraising. And I said, no, it's not on my list. And then I thought about it, and I realized that there's a whole lot of issues around fundraising and transition year. And they actually have devised what I think is a very good model, because there's all sorts of charities and other organizations that a bit inconsiderately sometimes knock on the door. And again, I think if I remember, that chapter begins in Grafton Street on a Friday afternoon, because you walk down Grafton Street on a Friday afternoon, you will be not quite assaulted, but you will be presented with opportunities to put money in boxes. And it's often TY youngsters. And you talk to them, and in some cases, they don't necessarily know what they're doing. And it's a bit of a soft option, maybe for the charity, a bit of a soft option for the school in terms of Friday afternoon, keep them out of trouble. Whereas what Patsy Sweeney and St. Mary's Ballina, what they devised is a really good model of saying we do a local charity in the first term, we do an international charity like Trocora, let's say, or Concern in the second one, and then in the third term, they actually have a very clever thing where they've been associated with the Children's Research Centre in Crumlin. But they build that into saying, now how do we get into the Guinness Book of Records? So the largest number of women walking or racing in high heels, I think they, you know, but it's that imagination. And I suppose what I'm trying to say is imagination is very central to making transition year good. And now that we're 20 years on, or 20 years on since the mainstreaming, I suppose I wanted to show in the book it's imagination, and you just don't copy what somebody else is doing. The best ones come up with their own way of approaching, and mainstream sort of teaching science, teaching English, teaching Irish, all those things, teaching religion. They're all, I think, quite creative and imaginative.
And is the book intended for teachers and schools, or is it for parents?
It was primarily thinking of teachers and schools, but a number of parents who've read it tell me, oh, it's quite good.
Yeah, but I could imagine for schools, you know, I mean, they mightn't want to copy, but some of the ideas in here could actually inspire them to come up with their own ideas.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, to me, there is not a blueprint. I mean, I think the short answer to your first question, what makes a good transition year? Keep it fresh. How do you keep it fresh? You have to be imaginative. You have to come up with new things every year. like a number of schools were really creative around the 1916 centenary celebration. You can only do it in 2016. So that was a nice example. That's where transition year thinking was, you know, oh, we've a fantastic opportunity in 2016 to do something. And we've still more anniversaries coming up, if you take that approach. And again, it's also about, from a leadership point of view within schools, principals and deputy principals, looking out, and TY coordinators, looking out for, you know, who on the staff this year kind of might have the surge of energy to really lead something that we've never done before. And that also, because that enthusiasm and energy and creativity is communicated to the youngsters. And the flip side of that is also true, which is, if it's dull and boring, the youngsters detect that and they know it. And every year they do the same thing or whatever. That's a dead hand.
How did you first get involved in transition year yourself, Jerry?
In the mid-80s, I was deputy principal in Firthouse Community College. As I mentioned, it was introduced in 74, but it was quite restricted. And an invitation came, I think, in 86. And Michael Ganey was principal, and the two of us just looked and said, this is a fantastic opportunity for our students, along the lines I was saying about the opportunity for maturity. So we had a great team of people in that school, and we introduced it. So I taught a few modules on it. And then, I think it was about 94, an inspector, Chris Connolly, came into the school one day, and he said, I'd like to have a look at the transition year. And I spent the day with him, showing him this, that and the other, telling him all these modules, and I didn't realise it was a form of interview. A few days later I got a call saying the department is putting a national action team into place, we'd like you to be on it. So I got seconded and spent 5 years full time on the road, going around in that mid to late 90s, I suppose, supporting schools introduced the program, and it was great. Like, it was a great experience for me, and it was very exciting to be part of that project and to see how well teachers responded to the opportunity that was presented by Transition Year.
And that is how Jerry Jeffers began his road to becoming an expert on Transition Year. That expertise led to the publication of his book, Transition Year in Action, which is published by the Liffey Press. I'll bring you the second part of my interview with Jerry on next week's programme. In the meantime, if you'd like to get in touch with comments or suggestions, please write to insideeducation@dublincityfm.ie. You can find links to hundreds of previous programmes at seandelaney.com/podcasts. Until the same time next week, this is Sean Delaney signing off. Thank you for listening.